Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The scope of the investigation now into the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, it's huge. 18,000 tips as of this recording so far. Millions of views on every family video that's been put out there. We got Reddit threads dissecting body language frame by frame, comment sections full of accusations and amateur analysis, people claiming that they have her, people claiming that they know where she is, or they know the guy who has her, or the girl who has her, whoever has her, but they need some money to tell you that. This case isn't just being investigated. It's being watched and judged by the entire country in real time. That mass observation isn't neutral. It changes the psychology of everyone involved, the family performing grief under a microscope, witnesses who might stay silent because they fear becoming targets, even the perpetrator watching themselves be dissected by strangers online and on television. What is going on here? That's what we're going to break down more of. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us. Let's start on this, on the people angle. You spent your career as one of the few people trained to actually read human behavior the way you can. Now, millions of people are watching this case and convinced they can do the same from their couch. What do you think is happening here collectively in an investigation when the entire public becomes the amateur behavioral analysis unit, essentially?
First, I don't want to discount. I mean, it's a great lead-in, Tony. I don't want to discount ever anyone's ability to do what we do and what I do. Mm-hmm. Because everyone can do it. It's
sure.
And here's, but you know what? Here's what the rep is that allows, that I get enjoyment out of doing this and allows me to continue to do this, is it's not the rep of what I see. It's the rep of not being distracted, as you said, by all the noise. Mm-hmm. I don't get caught up in my own confirmation biases, letting go of confirmation biases. I explore possibilities. I explore possibilities first by taking in data, looking at research and what the research shows us. And then I look at whether these behavior patterns fit or don't fit what people are saying. And that's exactly how I do what I do. And I do so with no agenda. That is the hardest thing, because what happens is when people without a lot of reps look at this, they're seeing a lot of good things, but they have an agenda. They want to think someone's this. They believe this. They heard it from someone they think is reputable here. So now they've inflicted their own personal confirmation biases on what they're taking in, and they disclude everything else because they want to believe this one thing. Meanwhile, what the people on the ground are doing is when you're doing your lead, and the thing that popped in my mind was Star Wars, when in the first one, when Luke is seeing all these things coming in, and all he's saying is stay on target, stay on target. And that's what they're doing. That's what investigators on the ground are doing. They got to stay on target because there's a lot of noise, a lot of really big distractions that are not helpful in any way. And it gets people really, really wound up. And it's sad.
And how do you know what the target is in a case like this? Where, I mean, it feels like it's a moving target. Some things present themselves as possibly being targets, and then they're not. Obviously, the target here is to get her back. That's ultimately the number A1 target. But to reach that target, we have to understand what type of ground we're playing on, who we're playing with, what's going to get us from point A to point B to reach that target. And there's been a lot here. Obviously, one of the big things has been ransom notes that have come through, and I think for the most part have been debunked. Nothing has come of any of those, but it gave hope. It put a lot of emotion in there. It mixed in confirmation bias of course, this is a kidnapping, and it's this and that. And then when it doesn't pan out, what do you do? But there's a lot of it, because it's not just the energy of the general public that then is being pushed in that direction. It's investigators. It's it's other people that have to look at all these possible targets that keep coming up. It's kind of the forest before the trees. And it's hard to, I think, eventually see what that target is when all these things have come up in front of you.
So here's what's very helpful at this stage of the investigation right now that helps with all this noise, because noise is built over time. But at this point, at the very beginning of the investigation, when she goes missing, what happens is you got to collect as much data as you possibly can on scene and from witnesses, hearsay, everything. And you got to start following all those leads. And the first thing you're going to do, like we did here, is, all right, someone says there's a ransom note. So the first thing you do is you pull up the laws of probability. You look at the research and you look at what we've observed. Does this fit a pattern? And if it doesn't, then we can start to filter the noise away, because there's a lot of noise talking about the abduction. Yet I'm like, we got to look at here, got to look at here. But at this point of the investigation, it's even more evident, like you just said, that this was not an abduction. It was not a kidnapping for monetary gain. It was some sort of home invasion, gone sideways, escalation. Because what's happening is you have all this other noise out there with all these conspiracy theories and everything. But meanwhile, we have enough data, and now we have video cam. We got some photos. We got some more forensics coming in, because all the research facilities are coming back with returns on all the digital forensics. And so because they're not looking at what happened, there's more of we got a better idea of what did happen. So they're able to narrow in a little bit, even though the noise is all out here and you can start ignoring that noise more. So here's what they will do. They will eventually get to and cover every single one of those tips that comes in. But now the screening process and the triaging of those tips is much better than what, because at the very beginning, all tips are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know. But right now they're triaging and they're able to really narrow it down.
Let's talk about some of those tips that are coming in. One that has come in is actually in the form of some video, and I think we have it. This is if you're watching us on YouTube or in Substack, this is the video of the man was taken. The timestamp on this is 1:53 a.m. This is at another residence that they're saying is about 5 miles from the residence of Nancy Guthrie. The interesting part of this is he looks a lot like the guy, and it's 1:53 in the morning. Appears to be the same jacket. Appears to be he has two backpacks in this video. It looks like he's taking and pushing one over the side of a berm, but then retreats and decides to not do that. He doesn't jump over the berm. He just goes over there and turns around. But it does look remarkably like the person that we saw on Nancy Guthrie's porch at 12:12 a.m., which is now we've learned the timestamp of the infamous video now where we see the masked man on Nancy Guthrie's porch. Very, very similar. We're talking about a 19-minute window of time that it would take from this taking place for that person to reach the porch. 19 minutes in the middle of the night. 5 miles away, very doable. And then there we go. This is the, we can see the masked take on him when he's on the porch. What's your take on this new piece of evidence that's come out that somebody shared from their own Ring cameras?
Huge. I think it's huge. And not just because we see a guy with a backpack, but this is huge because when we're looking at behavior patterns, how often and common is it for someone to show up? And this is the first question I'm going to ask, you know, the people in that house. Have you ever had this happen before? Because what we're looking for is arcs of normalcy or arcs of behavior. Mm-hmm. If they say, which it most likely they will, but we don't know. That's why we assess everything that comes in. We've never had this happen before. I don't know who that is. what's the laws of probability that that person is different than the deviation of the arc of normal at Nancy's house? Mm-hmm. We're talking almost zero. So I think they're most likely linked. They, whether it's the same person, different person, again, kind of go into what are your thoughts are. There might maybe multiple people, although the stats are low on that.
Yeah.
But the likelihood of probablyhood of a probability of connection, huge. So well, I think this is a great find.
I mean, we're talking 5 miles down the road from the house. I mean, for the sake of this argument, let's just say it's the same guy. We don't know for sure, but let's just say it is. It looks rather, I mean, without knowing what the hell he's doing, it looks like suspicious activity at 1:53 in the morning. What do you think is going on in that video? Is this a man that is looking to do a B&E somewhere and maybe saw something that turned him away from that residence and pursuing that? And then he moved down the road and Nancy ended up being, unfortunately, the poor random choice that this person took to break into their home?
That's a really, and I'm sorry.
It could be very simple. I mean, that mean that's,
It really could be on this one. And here's why I say that. My initial response is going to be no, because the ransom note had so many details.
But is a ransom note of anything to do with this?
Yes. So then my mind quickly reminded myself that, nope, that ransom note's not tied to the intrusion, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think they're two totally separate crimes.
Yeah, you know? I'm thinking that. And so it could have been, couldn't get in. What I typically do is when I first see something, I get initial impressions and then I do some more research. I think about it some more. I place myself in that situation. I mean, I do a lot of mental gymnastics to start processing that information. But my first take was, my first take was, wow, this is him preparing and having a place far enough away that he can kind of set himself up for the intrusion into Nancy's house. Mm-hmm. But that's under the presumption that Nancy's house was the primary target. It might not have been. And so I think that's part of the question. And so I think what they'll be doing part of this investigation is assessing that very question you brought up. What was going on in that video? They're going to be talking to the owners. What areas was he in? What things were being attempted? Did you see any attempts at doors, windows? What other things were tied to this? What's in the house? Have you had any workers around the house? Because I'm still going on my presumption based on stats analysis that this was most likely some sort of worker that knew the area halfway decently enough to target the area. And is there any connection between those people in Nancy's house with the workers they use? So this is the kind of research and background analysis they're going to do to see if this was a primary target, then the secondary target was Nancy's house or vice versa.
I mean, it makes me wonder, too, that of another stat, and I don't have it, but I'm assuming, you know, B&Es are, you know, I don't know that I've never done one. Don't plan on it. But I would assume that if you're going to do that, you set out that night knowing where you're going to go. I don't know that it's just like window shopping. I mean, although maybe it is for some. Maybe, you know, real petty. I mean, you think of like, you know, teenagers or, you know, some misguided youth that's just out breaking in and getting money to do whatever. But I don't know. This guy, the way that he came, you know, seemingly somewhat prepared with the gloves and the backpack, you know, nothing, no skin showing, that there's a level of sophistication, but a level of preparation there that I don't know. It reads to me more like there's more of a plan in place of where someone is going versus, you know, well, this house didn't work. Let's just try the couple down the block, you know?
But now as I'm, again, you're watching my mind go as we're thinking, as I'm reviewing it. So yeah. House, he wasn't all geared up like he was at Nancy's house. And so,
or was that not even a break-in? Was that literally, I mean, we don't know. I mean, there looked like there were several cars parked there, and we don't have a lot of context on that video. But that does, it makes me wonder a little bit, like, well, is this possibly an area where maybe this person resides or was staying or somewhere in this vicinity with that many cars parked around? You know, is this him leaving?
that's why it's important to get the context and talk to the owner and all that. But here's why you focus on this right now, because as a filter, this is huge. Because again, the first question, has this ever happened before? Has this person been on your Cam at night, or is this routine? Not routine. Where was, what was that area he was doing? I mean, so there's all those questions you're answering. But as of right now, it's very suspect just because of the timing and the outfit and the backpacks.
Well, I mean, what are the odds, number one, that there's going to be anyone walking around at 1:53 in the morning that happens to have the exact same, very close to the same getup on as the guy that ends up on Nancy's camera 5 miles away? Yeah. Or are the odds of anyone walking around the entire Crater Tucson area looking exactly like this? And more or less that he's 5 miles away from the house and looking a bit suspicious in the middle of the night.
It's either him or someone with a really bad luck.
It's Chad Daybell. Chad Daybell's out. This is all another.
So it's either going to be, it's either him or they're going to find someone that might give him another lead because it's really bad luck on his part and he saw someone else. I mean, so either way, this is a, it's a very good find.
It's going to be fascinating to see what that leads to, if anything.
And I would, you know, again, as we keep thinking live on this, so here once again is this my wife hates it when I use this word, this idiot, is he allows himself to be caught on Nancy's camera and tries to cover it with a branch, which shows his level of intellect. Preparation, yes. Good intellectual preparation, no. And here he is again being caught on another ring cam doing some stupid stuff. It fits his it fits the pattern of behavior of stupid if we're going to arc this guy.
And I want to talk about stupid here, and I think we're going to get to that next. Before we do, give us your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube or on Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the description. Love for you to weigh in and give us your feedback. Cameras on every doorbell, GPS in every home, pacemaker apps pinging in real time, license plate readers on highways, digital footprints on every transaction, and yet 12 days in, more than 100 investigators, FBI resources, 18,000 tips, an 84-year-old woman is simply gone. No vehicle of interest, no named suspects, no confirmed sighting since she walked through her own door or went in through her garage, which I believe is what the understanding is when she was dropped off that evening. Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, is with us. All that being said, Robin, the gazillion ways that we can surveil things these days, just the idea of making someone disappear in 2026 is kind of a, I mean, people go disappear every day, but with the resources we have available, with the attention on this, with what we know exists in and around this community in terms of surveillance, how is it that we're 12 days in and we are literally still feeling like it's the night of the announcement that she's gone?
We are. I don't know about law enforcement.
True.
So they're not sharing very much at all. Mm-hmm. And from the now amount of activity and amount of people looking at this, I think there's a lot going on, especially since now they have video and 5,000 tips now up to how many? I mean, just when, so when they first released the video and the photos, I think it was at 5,000 in the first release when that came out. So it's happening that you don't see, because remember, the only information we have, because there's no public releases of anything, the only information we have is what we're gleaning from what we're observing from movement around the outside. That doesn't show us what the forensic digital analysis is going on behind the scenes and all the video analysis that they have, all the cameras that they captured. So there could be an awful lot that's going on that we're completely unaware of because what they're doing is most likely, at least what Robin would be doing, is they are cross that now they're cross-referencing because you have interviews of all the people showing photos, going canvassing neighborhoods and all the leads that came in from people that thought things. And then you have all the folks on the other side doing the digital analysis of cell phone towers, video cams, you know, plate readers, all these things. And so they now have their things. And what's happening now, hopefully, is now they're, where's the overlaps? Because once they have the overlaps, then you have a smaller pool of people you're looking at. And now we start digging deeper on each one of these. That's what we're not seeing on the outside looking in 12 days. But I think they are now at a closer core of what they're looking at. We just don't know what that is. And I only do think that's going on just because there's still movement. There's still people on the ground. this video release was huge. This other one that just came out, that's another big one. Mm-hmm. And silence from people right now, I think, means that there's a lot going on, because they're just wanting to get closer, wanting to get fast. Because what happens is, as at this stage of the investigation, if things are going well, tempo is mounting. Because, you know, because again, when you just, I'm so visualized, you know, I keep doing these visual references. Mm-hmm. You know, the investigation starts way out here, and you get all these data points, and you don't know what to do. But as soon as you get one break, and I think this one of the big breaks was these videos and photos, and you got a huge influx of information, which mm-hmm. allowed them to create a tighter filter. And once you start tightening filters, it's like when you do you ever. You got a funnel and you like spin a marble that goes down, and the closer it gets to the center, it speeds. That's what's happening now. I think it's getting more concentric, it's coming in, it's condensing, and it's getting tighter. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to find someone who's going to be a major break, but they know what they need to look at. Whether they can get it all is what I think they're working on, because they've been able to filter out all the chaff right now that is completely useless. They're really narrowed down on what they need and what they're trying to get.
You think the whoever did this is watching this coverage and tailoring their own response to it? I mean, and I'm not in any way saying, you know, tailoring the response as, hey, let's send a ransom note out or something. I think that those are bunk. But I'm just going to be blunt. I don't necessarily believe anymore that she's around. So whoever did this is probably more so likely looking to cover their own tracks and not be connected to this. And they have, you know, 12 days now where they could have disappeared. They could be anywhere on the planet at this point.
So it's a good thought experiment to do, to work through. It's what investigators should be doing right now. I thought about this a lot when I covered prison breaks. You know, I've covered a lot of prison breaks that happened in the last 3 or 4 years, and people are always asking, oh, they must be long gone in a different country by now. And I go, no, they're going to go where you feel safe. And mm-hmm. so even in this case, what I think is happening is, if this person's watching, and they might not even be, they probably are, but what happens is you feel that noose starting to tighten. I mean, just think about this, Tony, when you are threatened, when you think, feeling things are unsafe, what do you do? Who do you go to? We tend to go to those we love and that care mm-hmm. for us, and we know they're going to take care of us as we hunker down when we're not feeling well. What do? We want to be taken care of. And so this person, in my mind, is hunkering down, laying low. And now we just have to ask, where would they lay low? They're going to lay low with people they feel safe with. If they're loners, complete loners, then I'd be on a run. Mm-hmm. But if this person's not a loner and they do have at least one or two people in their life that they feel safe with, they're going to hunker down with them. Is that local, or is that in Mexico, or is that in Canada? Okay. I don't know. But they're going to hunker down where they feel safe. And that's why when investigators are investigating things, they're always asking, so, you know, what kind of people do they know? What kind of friends do they have? Because that's where people go. Traditionally, according to stats, we will go into hiding where we feel safe. And where do we feel safe? With people that we think unconditionally love us, if that's even the case here.
How safe do you think this person feels right now, the man that we saw in that video?
Not very. First of all, I don't think, no one ever expects the attention things get as much as they do get on these big cases, because my conjecture based on research and everything and watching this guy, this was not the guy's first rodeo doing this. Mm-hmm. I think he's a petty thief that has done home invasions and break-ins before without incident. And so he's got some reps doing this where he got away with it. It wasn't a big deal, because it probably wasn't a big heist. He wasn't like, he's not equipped here to walk out with TVs and stereos like they used to. He's looking for very small things. Maybe even strategically does it so they're not even noticed they're gone for a month, or even, and when they are noticed, the people, like, I mean, think about this. If he's targeting, because let's go down the road that he was actually targeted for a home invasion, and people say, well, he doesn't have an empty backpack to walk out with loot. Well, maybe he wasn't planning to walk out with loot. Maybe his reps are, I've observed and know of a piece of jewelry I'm going to go for. When I saw Nancy last time, when I saw her on the church video, she's wearing this necklace I think would be worth a lot of money. He goes in targeting a very specific thing that won't be missed by an absent minded elderly lady. See what I mean? You can really kind of put together what's in someone's mindset here to kind of fit this package, and so that it won't be reported. But all of a sudden, he hit the wrong house and something goes wrong accidentally inside. He freaks out, you know, the panic escalation, doesn't know what to do. And all of a sudden it's national media, and it's never been done that way before. Would that create, would that create fear in him? Absolutely.
I wonder how much do you think this person is surprised right now at what they have put into motion? I mean, do you think that it's like, oh God, I thought this was just going to be a good old B&E. I was going to go get a ring or whatever. And there's some jewelry and now it's turned into the international manhunt of the year. You know,
you'd have to be surprised because so even if he did this only one other time, I'm guessing two or three. Just because of how he looked and what he was wearing, because the first we've seen people do horrendous things the first time, and we see what a bag of rags they look like. This didn't look like a bag of rags. He just looked stupid.
Didn't look like super pro, but didn't look amateur quite yet. Like it's like couple reps.
This is a couple reps guy to me.
Yeah,
and a couple reps of petty crime, breaking into houses and getting away with it. And so surprised, because it's never got national attention like this. He probably didn't even. So my conjecture. Is it probably didn't even, if it was reported to police, it's going to be reported to police when it was actually something went missing, was actually noticed, which may have been months or weeks or years down the road. So he's not used to attention at all because he thought his methodology of doing this was solid. Because and why I say that, look at how he approached that front door. No big issue, no big deal.
Let's talk about that front door because as of our recording of this today, a big tent was put up around that front door and then taken down. It was like a pop-up tent. It wasn't, you know, carnival, but it was, you know, enough that there was walls on it for a period of time. Kind of, I don't want to say blackout, but it certainly, you know, prevented anyone from viewing what was going on inside that tent. And that was right over the front door area, right where the film captured the man in it. Lots of speculation as to what might be going on in that tent, in that small window when it was up before it came down. What's your thoughts on what the FBI was doing in that tent?
Yeah, forensic analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they needed a clean room of some sort to provide the kind of lighting they need to do the kind of collection they need to do in that moment. So, you know, outside of prying eyes for one thing, but I really think they needed some sort of light and environmental conditions to do the investigation they're going to do on that front, because that's where the entire focus was, which is, you know, another contributor on one of the news channels, a retired FBI guy, brought up a really great point. And I'm sorry if we're going to get into it anyway, but it really struck me that here's this guy going at the front door, and this front door is a large oak front door, and it's got this Spanish, you know, grating on the front as extra. It's both ornamental as well as protective because you can't get through it. So that's the front door he went through or tried to break through, and the rain came was. If he had walked around the side of the house or the back of the house where the pool is, there's no ring cameras. There is a 16 glass panel door that you could have just broken one of those. The windows aren't gated or guarded. I mean, there was so many other easy entry points. Mm-hmm. He chose the hardest point to go through to get in this house, as well as that's not the entry point. If you're a family member or someone, a close associate that knows the house, would have gone through either.
And that's, it makes you go, well, how well planned was this? If at all, I mean,
because remember we're overlaying. And this is where I think it's all falling apart for the narrative that started at the beginning. People are overlaying the knowledge of this person because they're saying this person must be the same as the ransomer.
Mm-hmm. And I'm, yeah.
The ransomer had a lot of knowledge. This guy doesn't.
Yeah.
I do not think they're one and the same.
No, I'd have to agree.
Think of the logic of this. The people that sent the ransom note seem to know the house, the location, and what Nancy's wearing, all those things, which meant they would have known the layout of the house. They would have known that the best point of entry, if you're going to do an invasion, whether it's for abduction or burglary, was not that front door.
Yeah. Obviously, there's odds to everything, and we've talked about so many odds over the last 2 weeks on this case. But, you know, there's high odds, there's low odds, and there's low odds sometimes because those odds hit, because sometimes the odds are just very bizarre. That would just make this even more bizarre, is if the world is looking at this. I think a lot of media is looking at this as something much, much larger and more complicated than it may actually be. And we tend to do that, especially when it's a big story or somebody of note or something of note. The reaction, has to match what happened before. It has to make just as much sense because it's such a big thing. And sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is just something completely stupid where this literally could be a guy that, well, I was going to go do a B&E over here that maybe they're home. I really need some money. Shit, I know Nancy has a ring or whatever. Or there's something that, like, I could probably get in there and get that. It could be that simple. It could be that simple of just somebody that decided they were going to go and try and make a quick buck by stealing something from the old lady's house, and it turned into this shit show.
I really think, and we said this in the last show, if you remove the aspect that was covered originally of the abduction for ransom, if you remove that element from it and you just looked at it without that, this is what it looks like, according to stats, was a home invasion for robbery with an accidental homicide, potentially.
Yeah. And they took the body to.
Yeah, absolutely. And which actually it's a high probability stat for that action to actually take place because it covers their tracks a little bit better, gives them time. The other thing about that, too. Oh, man, I think it just fleeted out of my head as I was thinking it.
I have a question on it, though, right there. So I'll throw it in. How common is it when you have a home invasion gone wrong and there is, a homicide that takes place? That they don't just leave the body and get the hell out of Dodge. How often is it that they do take the body to try and prevent?
I wish I could remember the exact. I looked up the number. It's actually higher than you'd think.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not just I don't know. it's to try to put yourself in these scenarios that you really never would do. That's kind of hard sometimes.
I did it.
Yeah. But it's I don't know that I would be. I think I'd be freaking out. I mean, that's me, though, because this is not a rep for me.
And that's why they do it. Panic at, remember.
Yeah. But somebody with a few reps may be like, I can handle this. I can get this body out of here.
This is the thing I was going to say. Yeah. It kind of goes to this entire thing. I think when and if they get this guy, everyone's going to be incredibly underwhelmed about who this is. What happened, what the real thing was. I am holding very, very solid because of all the data points are coming in. Again, completely open to new data, shifting me to different theories and scenarios because that's what we do. Yeah. You just keep taking in and adjusting on the fly. And I think it's going to be extremely underwhelming because I think it was a home invasion that went sideways, panic escalation. He took her on the way out the door because he didn't want to get caught as fast. And here's the reason why. And this is why he might have a few reps, because we said it on one of the first episodes of this. If he left a body that was found, he could be then charged with murder. If he takes the body, then you can't find it. Then there's no murder charge, or at least harder to prove in court if he's ever caught.
Which is true.
I hate talking about her, Nancy in the past tense. So this, hypothetically.
This is all hypothetical. Yeah, I mean,
remains alive, but they are actually the investigation. As investigations go, they still should be in primary mode of finding her, but we're hitting the time frames where it will be shifting in the next couple of days.
Are we in recovery mode here yet, or is it still?
So the initial push was and is and always should be to find the victim, assume she's alive, and the secondary, equally as important, will be find the culprit and perpetrator. But the number one objective was to find her. And now I think the timing they say is like 10 to 14 days is when the shift starts shifting, where they're going to start shifting to the primary of finding him and then her. In general, and it's not, and for family and everyone listening, it's not because they don't think it's important. It's just, just look at the data points coming in. We're not getting more data points on her. We're only getting data points on the perpetrator. That's the reason why.
Yeah. Yeah. 18,000 tips have come in, but somewhere out there is a person who hasn't called. neighbor who saw something but isn't sure it matters, a coworker who's noticed something or someone acting differently, a family member protecting someone they love, a friend who heard something and convinced themselves it was nothing. The tip that breaks this case probably hasn't been made yet, or maybe we just watched it. That might have been the tip.
Yeah.
Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with us. Robin, with all these tips that are coming in, what's your read on why we haven't gotten anything super evident yet? And again, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe there is, but we're 12 days here now. We still don't have her. You got a $50,000 reward out there. That's nothing to, you know, shake your head at, especially if you might know somebody shady who you think might have, you know, be behind this. Is there a world here where people don't want to come forward because there is just too damn much media attention on this, and they're afraid that somehow they're going to be thrown into the mix of a possible suspect when they're really just trying to provide information?
I'm not getting that sense. I get the sense, because of the number of tips that are coming in, that people are willing and want to help, especially the way it's being covered very positively. Yeah. You know, a lot of very community-based things of people coming together. As you were saying that, as you're talking, things are popping in my head. Mm-hmm. So here's just an interesting thought. For one, we're not getting more information that's accessible to the public because they don't need the public's help more at this point, and they put out information when they do. Mm-hmm. That's good. For me looking at it, that means they have enough to keep working. They don't need more, because they're still covering all the leads that are coming in and all the forensic data and evidence they're going through. So that's good. The fact that they're not keep soliciting the public for more information means they might have enough. Again, I'm glass half full kind of guy on this, right? Yeah. And here's the other thing too. It's really interesting about that $50,000. Not a lot of money. We've seen more. So, glass half full on this, because they don't need to post more money because they have enough information coming in. See what I mean?
Possibly. Sure, but they still don't have her.
as of this recording,
yeah.
But I see more movement on this in the tempo of data being collected than I saw on Koberger.
How effective are rewards in situations like this?
That's a good question.
You know, I do wonder about, I mean, we see them every now and then. I mean, again, this is a very rare situation too. So there's, you know, we see people that are wanted and such, but I wonder how much that actually does drive the needle of getting to the answers that you're going for. I'd also be curious, how many times do they pay out rewards when for cases of this nature, when somebody does come forward?
The government's great at finding reasons why not to give you the money.
not trying to discourage anybody, but yeah.
So let's put our thought experiment hat and go down the world of rewards and how they work and how the effect of them people around. So the purpose of a reward is to inspire people with credible tips, which means people that are surrounding the perpetrator of the crime to give them up and turn them over. Mm-hmm. And so the people typically around someone, you're going to have multiple types of people. The people typically around someone, if they have healthy relationships and the people around them have moral compasses and empathy and consciences, they're the ones most likely to turn someone in. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be for the, but here's the thing, it wouldn't be for the reward. It'd be because it's the right thing to do. So people that typically turn people in, that are good Samaritans, don't turn them in for the reward. They do it because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. People that turn people in for rewards are other opportunists themselves looking to make bank off of you being a bigger idiot than me. Mm-hmm. And so it really depends on the circle of people around this individual. Does he have healthy relationships, unhealthy relationships, or any relationships? How much are you watching the news? You know, what was really striking to me was the first individual they detained and brought in for questioning, and they're showing his mother-in-law the video and the photo clips, asking her if she thought this was him.
Yeah.
They had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people, and this guy's entire world around him might have no idea what's going on. They just might say, hey, someone might be under the weather because he's been acting really weird lately, and they have no idea what's going on.
That's I don't even want to know how that relationship is going now. after the mother-in-law turns you in and it's not you, like, oh, that'd be a little weird. That might be a little awkward conversation in that family. If you were advising investigators right now on how to reach this person, obviously money is the one thing we just talked about that's out there, but are there emotional levers? And I mean, it's maybe not even to, you know, you're not going to necessarily reach the person. Well, maybe you could that did this on an emotional level. They clearly have a ability to do some pretty horrible shit, but it'd be probably more so those around them that may have some sort of knowledge of this. Is there more that can be done, should be done? You know, just might as well take a shot at it, because what else have you got to lose at this point? In terms of a plea to whoever has her, I know the Guthries, obviously they have made their videos. They've made four of them now. They were addressed to what, you know, I think they, you know, what they believed at the moment in time was someone, you know, that was holding her for ransom. But if that's not the person who has her, they were kind of speaking to the wrong person, but certainly emotion was out there. Is there more that can be done? Or does that, I don't know, if you're dealing with a real sadistic, horrible human being, could that make it worse? I don't know.
So here's a presumption I think would be an effective way to go down. And this might actually be weighing on this guy's mind if he's tracking this at all. So my presumption is, based on the data analysis and everything we're looking at, I don't think the intent was going in there and doing harm to Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a byproduct and an accident of whatever happened, because he was in there to get something else.
Yeah.
So what you typically do in an interview, then, say he was to be interviewed after an arrest, what you do is to inspire him to tell his side of the story, because that's what you, hey, listen, everyone's got a different point of view and a different side of the story. You've been painted horribly in the public right now, obviously, because, you know, she's gone and you're this horrible person. But I think it must have been an accident. You didn't go in there for that, did you? And so you use empathy and you do what's called a rationalization. The RPMs are called rationalizations, projections, and minimizers. You help, you say, you help them share, because you say, listen, that wasn't your intent. We know that. Tell me what happened. Because then it helps them relieve that shame and guilt that they didn't want that to happen. If they have empathy and they're not, you know, total psychopaths, and this was literally a byproduct that he didn't intend to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think Savannah's message, when she said, we just want to celebrate our mom.
Yeah.
That is a very congruent and a very empathetic way of saying, just give her back.
Yeah.
You know, we just want to celebrate her. We want to honor her. And using that messaging then to this individual out there saying, listen, just share, because we know you didn't mean to do this. It was something horrendous that went sideways. That's the messaging. If this person does have empathy, if that is actually what happened, it wasn't a targeted thing, which I think the law of averages is telling me it is. That's the messaging you put out there to compel either him or someone around him to keep poking and say, listen, dude, bad shit happens sometimes. And this is a really bad thing. You know, I mean, there's a lot of empathy you can really draw this person out with if he's empathetic himself in any way.
Yeah, and I think the response trigger to the empathy is going to be important in that sort of an equation, because I don't know that it would necessarily be that person is going to hear Savannah say that and go, oh gosh, I really want to give your mom back because that really hurts me. I think it'd be more so somebody within their own world.
Yep.
That knows that, yes, where it's like a mom, a son, a daughter, a child, a son, whatever, a sister, a lover, whatever it may be, that the image of this person in the person's mind that they care about, that whether it is that parent, lover, friend, son, whatever, how they're being viewed by their own peers, by the people that they care about, is what is going to be more of a driving factor than essentially a stranger, the Guthries, making the plea for how it's going to affect them. They, you got to get down to how it's going to affect this person and whether they're behind bars or not. Can you live with yourself? Can you live with your family or whoever mm-hmm. this is, knowing that you're the person who did this and just shut up and didn't get caught? And maybe your family won't tell on you, but the rest of your life is going to be going down with them having knowledge of what you did. And now they think very different of you than what they did before. Okay. Maybe they'll get respect back for you if you do own up to this and face the consequences.
And if nothing else, we'll stand by you. You know, yeah. as you're going through this, otherwise yeah. we won't. And I want to caveat this a little too, because I can imagine there's going to be listeners and watchers are saying, well, this is just some hardened criminal. And yes, kind of. I don't get the sense from what we've seen in these videos that we're dealing with some, you know, lifelong, you know, gangbanger this is a different kind of tenor and energy I'm getting from looking at these videos. I'm still thinking this is some petty thief that is rationalizing his behavior to take in these things that these rich elderly people don't need so I can provide for myself or yeah. the people I care about. That's you know, when you look at the data points on this, the type of crime, the way it's being conducted, that's the flavor I'm getting from this. And so this kind of messaging, if it is that type of person, this mm-hmm. is going to have a greater impact if, like you said, it's someone close to them mm-hmm. that takes what's being – that gets broadcast, translates it into the empathy they need to say, listen, if you do this, we can stand with you and be with you. And, you know, who knows, you'll get a lesser sentence potentially, and you'll get, you know, throw yourself on the mercy of the court kind of thing, as opposed to you keep running and you're on your own. Yeah. That weighs especially. So here's what's really interesting. Boy, I got my conjecture hat on big time now. So say this person was right, because people always rationalize their behavior that mm-hmm. because people never want to think they're doing it because they're self-centered and egocentric and they want to just take advantage.
Sure. I mean, the act of doing this would be out of desperation, and then how they justify it in their minds, you know, that's what you're saying.
I can almost guarantee that the type of person that does things like this is rationalizing their abhorrent behavior of stealing mm-hmm. because they're trying to provide for others.
Yeah.
If those others then reverse that messaging, because those others meant something to this person. If those others reverse that messaging and say, listen, we can be there for you if mm-hmm. if you do this and own up and talk about the horrible accident that happened inside that house as a little old lady was talking to you for 43 minutes, trying to talk you down off the ledge and she accidentally died.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very true. I mean, it does. If it was a B&E, and this is something that one is trying to provide for others by stealing, that does show empathy in its own weird way. It shows that person cares about someone else, that they're willing to go and risk their safety, their freedom to try and provide. Now, granted, there's many other ways you can provide that yeah. are legal.
I want to be very clear. I am not showing that.
No
goodness towards this person. This person did.
No, but sure. if you want to speak to the humanity of the person, and if this is what that is, that person would likely have some humanity. This isn't necessarily, from what we can gather, you know, and take it for what it's worth here. You know, this doesn't appear to be like a cartel hit or something. Right. It would have been a lot more, I think, done
brutal,
differently than this.
And directed.
Yeah. Yeah. And Nancy would be in parts at her house. You know, that was not this. So, yeah, I mean, I think you do have a good shot that you have somebody there that probably does have some empathy in them. And I wonder if it's that, and they are really shocked and horrified in their own way of what has now transpired and the hole that they have dug for themselves. And how the hell do you get out of it? And who knows about it?
And so this whole, you know, really good dialogue conjecture on this is not about showing empathy towards him. It's about using empathy to get them to confess
yes.
and come forward and own up to the horrendous thing that happened.
1,000%. And I'm glad we clarified that. I don't know.
I don't want people saying, oh my God, they're on the side.
People will still take things anyway, you know, but that's very clear. What we're saying is using the empathy and using that lever of empathy that a bad person has to try and get this thing solved. Fascinating conversation today, Robin. My goodness, you know, before we were doing this, right before we went on the air, I texted Robin. I'm like, I changed all the questions, which I know is never a good thing to do to Robin because he preps. But I was like,
I got them all in.
I just felt like, what else are we saying on this right now? Because I feel like we've covered every possible angle on this, and I didn't just want to keep going with more speculation over and over and over. But
no one's covered this.
Yeah. No. But I wanted to talk about it more on a different level of, yeah, you know, what can you do here? Because, yeah, and I think we did it. So fascinating conversation, as always. Thank you for being here and giving us your insights. Sizing People Up is, I would say, the most applicable book of yours right now for this topic. Your latest, it's Not All About Me. Very good. It's pre-order right now, right?
Yeah, pre-order. March 17th is the release date. We're coming close.
Which is like a month away, hard to believe. So get on that, put your pre-order in, and get him on the charts there on Amazon, wherever you get your books. All right, your thoughts in the comments section. Let us know. Weigh in. We would absolutely love to hear them. Substack is where you can do that, hiddenkillers.substack.com, or on our YouTube channel in the comments there. We go both places. Love to hear your feedback. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we got for you right here. Until next time, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight. Enjoy the excitement and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.